Welcome to Chew It with Pruitt, the regularly released podcast where your host, Kenny Pruitt, talks to people he knows about stuff that matters to them, all while hopefully making some new friends along the way. Join in on the conversation via email, contact@chewitpruitt.com, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter @ChewItPruitt, or literally let your voice be heard at 507-407-CHEW. He has a high school diploma and a microphone, so you might as well listen. He's Kenny, and this is his podcast.
Wow, it has been a long time, hasn't it? Welcome back to Chew It with Pruitt. I am your host, Kenny Pruitt. Now, a lot has happened in my life since I last released an episode. We had the birth of our third child. We sold a house, lived with family for a while, bought another house, moved twice. So much has been going on that, quite frankly, a hobby podcast that I make no money doing has been on the back burner, to say the least. However, I'm back, at least to release this episode, which is part three of my time with Kevin Zade. I'm not going to really say much other than we'll jump right into the rest of my time with Kevin.
The other thing that's cool is there's so many more options than just rating or logging movies. There's lists.
Okay.
So, like, for me, I put the best pictures in a list of my favorites. From, yeah, one to...
Or, like, my... I could do my comedies.
You could do your comedies. Which there would only be four. But,
Which comedy is not... Two of them. I have six. I gave you six comedies.
You gave me six.
And you're saying what? Two of them aren't?
American Beauty. The one about the gay teen. And the man who gets shot in the head. Because his wife is having an affair. Hilarious. And what was your other one?
Well, the other five.
I think it was,
Fight Club, True Grit, Inglourious Bastards, School of Rock, and Napoleon Dynamite.
I have trouble with discerning whether a movie is funny or whether a movie is a comedy.
Okay.
This is our main point of disagreeance. Not that it's that big of a deal. But there's a difference between a funny movie that you laughed out loud at.
Yep.
And it was funny, and it was good, and it was serious. I would say True Grit is not a comedy, but... Okay, so True Grit is not a comedy, but it's from two very dark comedians, the Coen brothers.
Right, yeah.
A lot of their movies are not comedies, i.e. Fargo. Fargo is not a comedy, but you laugh constantly throughout the film.
So you wouldn't consider that like a black comedy. You would say that's not a comedy. It's just the stylized drama.
Correct. Okay. I think that's where I would put it at. The Coen brothers is probably the hardest one, and which is why I would give you that, like, if you wanted True Grit, although True Grit I do not find amongst their funniest films by any means. The Big Lebowski now that's a comedy.
I don't even know if I've seen The Big Lebowski all the way through. I am the type of person who, I don't go back and revisit old movies often.
Sure.
So if I didn't see it within a year or two of it coming out, I probably won't see it.
Right.
And I haven't, like, just fallen in love with all Coen Brothers films that I've seen.
Yeah.
I enjoyed True Grit. I saw it in the theaters. And to me, like, I think it's funnier than it is serious, though the premise of it is a serious premise. Like, I think that it is so stylized, and you have, I mean, just some of the performances, like, are obviously intended to be comedic performances. Matt Damon's entire character in that film is only intended to
LaBeouf?
Be... Yeah, he's only intended to be a comedic character. And largely, Jeff Bridges, while he is mostly just playing Jeff Bridges,
right.
He is obviously intended, while he has very true, real human moments, his character is intended to be funny.
I think his performance is funny. I think his character is intended to be larger than life. I wouldn't say his... I think his performance is on point, and he's a comedy... He's a comedian character. Well, Jeff Bridges... So Matt Damon... His character is meant to be comic relief. However, he is not played as a comedy, as a comedian. He plays the straight man in that film. He does not take jokes. In fact, he doesn't like jokes. He's a very straight-laced character, which creates the comedy in that aspect.
Right. So, but I think that that would prove my point in saying that because he is... He's funny because he doesn't fit the tone of the rest of the movie. Like, if his exact character was put in a different film, then he wouldn't be funny because he would just fit the tone of that.
Sure.
So the intention of his character, as you said, is to be the comedic relief, though he is... Matt Damon
man.
Is playing
right.
it serious. Like, he's right. choosing to... Now, he knows what he's doing.
Yes.
Matt Damon's actually a very good actor, despite the fact that he often just makes really high-budget...
Kind of like, moderately
right.
crappy action.
Right. Like, I think he is genuinely a good actor.
Agreed.
And I think, actually, his character in Interstellar was very similar in the type of thing of... He actually just played it entirely seriously. In Interstellar. But he was just such a strange fit that, like, when you remember Matt Damon in that, in Interstellar, it wasn't necessarily comedy, but he sort of does, like, stick out, like, he's odd in this universe. He's unexpected.
He's the one they find on the ocean... planet or whatever.
Not the ocean planet. I think it's the frozen planet.
Yeah. Huh. I don't remember his character being that important. Or
it wasn't
even stick out.
I don't disagree.
I just can't
feel like
remember
his performance. Well, that was he was never in any of the previews. It actually was one of those things that like it was. I think kind of intended to be like, oh my gosh, Matt Damon's in this movie. But he. I think he does a good job of just, he plays, I think he actually has a pretty good comedic eye, or comedic ear, or
yeah.
like comedic timing
for sure.
in general, in the sense that like, but he's not trying to be funny.
Right.
But he knows it's funny.
I guess I don't remember him being funny in Interstellar.
It's not funny, but it is like... He's unexpected. Like, his character in general, the whole idea of him being... Like, he's putting out his beacon saying that this is a good planet, we can settle here. They go there to get him. You find out, like, on the way that he's in a relationship with Anne Hathaway.
Right.
But then realize, like, he has no... He couldn't care less about Anne Hathaway. He...
Just wanted to be saved.
Yeah, he just wanted to be saved. And he's actually willing to, like, kill Matthew McConaughey to save himself. But his...
Hilarious. I'm just kidding.
The comedic timing to me of it is, like... he's not playing it like vindictive. He's not playing it as in like I'm a murderous person. He's playing it just as like, what do you mean? Like, this is a completely normal thing. And it's like, this is absurd. Like, do you understand that like we're trying to save the human race? And like the tone in which he played it, I think if you put a different actor in that role, it's too much. And I'm not saying necessarily that he was funny in that role. I'm saying it's similar to his role as LaBeouf in the sense of if you cast a Will Ferrell as LaBeouf,
right?
It's not as good.
Right.
Oh, it's for not sure. Like, it's the fact that Matt Damon understands that I'm not, this character is written to be funny, played seriously.
Right.
Like, that's why it's funny. It doesn't need me to perform funny.
Sure, sure. I agree with that.
So I think that I'm just saying in a similar way in Interstellar, if you put a different actor in that role, if you put somebody like a Liam Neeson, he's going to play it too serious. He's going to play it too vindictive. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
It's going to, like, and so in that way, like, I think the that's why the LaBeouf role reminds me of his role in Interstellar. It's just, I think Matt Damon played it exactly right.
I'd agree with that 100%. I love True Grit. It might be six beers.
I don't even think I would rate every one of the movies on my list a six beer.
Yeah.
The reason that the six movies I chose made it on my list of comedies is because I thought they were funny and I owned them. So in my opinion, like sure. I chose to purchase them. They weren't movies that Holly owned that right. are just in our collection. They're six movies that I decided I liked enough to own. And when I think of them, I remember, like, laughing.
Tarantino is similar to the Coen brothers, where it's just so stylized. It's so specifically stylized. Inglourious Bastards, and what's the slave one? Django Unchained. I liked Inglourious Basterds quite a bit better than I liked Django Unchained. Yeah.
I think largely the reason I ended up kind of picking the movies that I did pick, I think if I'd watched Pulp Fiction 10 years ago, you know, or that movie's probably close to 20 years old now.
It's 91, I think.
Oh, gosh. So, yeah, I mean, very old.
Yeah.
So, if I had watched it 15 years ago, maybe that would be... You know, it's... Maybe that would be my favorite of his movies versus Inglourious Basterds.
Sure.
It's more widely regarded as the better movie than Inglourious Basterds is. But I think part of it is also just like when I watched it, I don't think I'd ever seen a Tarantino movie until I saw Inglourious Basterds in the theaters.
I think part of it is also the time Pulp Fiction came out.
Right.
It was very much the boost of independent cinema as you kind of know it.
Right.
Reservoir Dogs was kind of a one-off. You're kind of like, wow, that was kind of a strange, quirky, fun film. Yeah. Pulp Fiction comes back, what, just a year or two later. It's like... even bigger, more outlandish, more stranger, more specifically Tarantino.
Yeah.
And it's like, came out of nowhere, and you're like, wow, that was insane.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think Pulp Fiction is better.
And I think the same thing for me with why I would choose like True Grit over The Big Lebowski or Fargo is because I think that might have been the first... If it wasn't the first Coen Brothers film I'd seen, it was the first one that, like, I wanted to see of seeing it in the theaters, and I enjoyed it.
Have you seen No Country for Old Men?
Yes.
Is that a comedy?
No.
That's interesting to me because I see so much of the what you were talking about in the Anton Chukur character. No. The Javier Bardem character.
He's the bad guy.
The villain.
The villain.
The walking around with the cowpoke, the making him flip the quarter. It's like, I see so much of that whole Matt Damon-esque, he's playing it perfectly, the way he was supposed to play. And you kind of laugh because he's kind of monstrous and you can't tell if he's a character or if he's real or like if he's so like that's interesting to me that like, and even Josh Brolin's non-understanding of the way the world works, like why shouldn't he have this big thing of money? He found it, everyone was dead, why doesn't he get to keep the money?
Yeah.
Like, and he plays it so perfectly, so straight, so laced up as like it's his understanding of the world, which makes it so obscure to us who have this other understanding of like, right, you know, we get to number one watch it from an outside perspective,
right,
but number two be like, that's not your money, you found it surrounded by a bunch of dead people,
right?
Like, clearly that's not your money, you should just give the money back. You know, like, yeah, and you know, but he's got this some weird written code that makes you think like, this guy's not quite all there, but he plays it so perfectly. It's like, and so
I don't know why I don't consider, I mean, I think I'd have to watch it again. I don't know that I think I saw that one in theaters too. I don't know. I guess maybe I could have watched that movie in the right mindset and been.
Now, I won't disagree with you in the fact that True Grit is much funnier,
yeah,
than No Country for Old Men. But just, I feel like they're along the same tone. One is more serious.
I honestly don't remember the, like, the intimate details of the stories of each of them,
right,
honestly. I think maybe one difference that comes to mind is that Jeff Bridges, while he does end up being the character that you follow throughout the film, he is a very stark opposite of the girl.
Hailee Steinfeld.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, I think that plays into the comedic aspect of it in the sense of, like, you know, he's ridiculous, where she's taking this very seriously, and it's rightfully so. It's a very serious matter.
Right.
And he's, like, very cavalier, and, like, he's just drunk all the time, and he's, Jeff Bridges is playing it as, like, he's a blundering idiot sometimes.
Right.
And he's belligerent.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, so it's like,
he doesn't care. He's doing it for the money.
Right. And, like, you know, I guess, like, there's that contrast versus, like, No Country for Old Men. It's almost more of, like, to me, it all kind of has the same tone. So there's not necessarily that juxtaposition.
Sure, that's fair.
So maybe that's why I found True Grit funnier.
Well, True Grit is funnier. It's a funnier movie. I haven't thought about True Grit in a long time, although I do own it. I love it. I think you're right. I would take that off of my issues on your comedy list. That and Inglourious Bastards. Although I personally would not call either of them comedies, I would not be upset that they're listed, mostly because they're just so stylized.
Right.
I'd be like saying Leonardo 300 is your favorite comic book movie. That would be fine with me, because right, it's not a comic book hero. It's not what I think of when I hear comic yeah book, but it's so stylized that it would be, and ironically, based off of a comic book.
Right. That is a comic book
yeah
movie
exactly
in that regard.
As I said that out loud, I was like, well, that is a comic book movie, but you get
it. But
my,
it's not what you think of.
Right.
You think of a comic
a
book movie
hero,
being,
like,
it's a hero.
Exactly.
A superhero of some sort.
So if you were to say 300, what's your favorite? I'd be like, oh, that makes sense. Like, I get that. So, with those two, I take that off. Fight Club, on the other hand, I'm not... Number one, I didn't love it. In fact, number two, I didn't even really like it.
Fair enough.
And number two, it's just been a long, long time since I've seen it. But when I hear Fight Club, I don't think comedy. But I probably couldn't... I probably shouldn't say that it doesn't belong on the list because I have no real memory or taste of it. Like, I can't remember except thinking, like, where's the comedy in Fight Club? The scene where he slices the pornography in the theater, like, okay, that's kind of funny. The fact that he's punching himself in the face, that's kind of funny. Like, I don't remember it being funny, but I also don't remember it being good. So that might be the issue, is maybe I just didn't like the movie enough to remember whether it was funny or not. So
I think if you went back and watched it specifically with a comedic lens, I think that you'd see more comedy.
I might.
I think, honestly, each of the four, obviously, School of Rock and Napoleon Dynamite yes. are comedies.
Yes.
We're in agreement about that. Now, could I count School of Rock as a musical, in your opinion?
Sure. I would say yes, sure.
So I could say, like, if somebody asked, like...
What's your favorite musical? What's your favorite?
School of Rock. Okay. Interesting. Okay. So School of Rock, Napoleon Dynamite, obviously, they're comedies. And obviously, I know that, like, they're not great comedies. But actually, I think most comedies, it's one of those things where it's, like... It's all about at what point in your life you watched it. I don't think anyone, in my opinion, now, if they were in their late 20s, early 30s, our age, and they watched Dumb and Dumber for the first time, and they had seen other comedies, they liked other... They're not going to like Dumb and Dumber.
It's terrible.
But, like, if you watch Dumb and Dumber as a teenager, you're always going to love... You know, if you like it, the first time you watch, you're always going to love Dumb and Dumber. It's always going to be... That's one of the best comedies.
Among your top six, yeah, sure.
And so I understand Napoleon Dynamite and School of Rock are those for me. They're my Dumb and Dumber. They're my Anchorman. You know, they're the ones I watched when I was younger that, like, I still like them.
Yeah.
Even though I know objectively. I think you could actually make argument that School of Rock actually is pretty good.
Oh, I would agree. But I agree with both of those, actually. I don't find Napoleon Dynamite that good. But I think it's widely acclaimed as right. actually a pretty interesting piece of filmmaking.
Yeah.
Like,
and so they're both comedies. I think the other four, the ones you have issues with, if you went back and watched them and you said, okay, I'm watching them for their comedic value, I think that you'd go away from all four of them, understanding why, at least, I would consider them a comedy.
And I think that is where... I think that is the base root of this disagreement we have.
Yeah.
Is the intention of the film. Like, to me, a comedy is Mel Brooks.
So, I mean, what do you say to...
It's Judd Apatow.
What
it's,
do you say to the case of American Beauty calling itself a comedy?
Well, I don't what think do American Beauty called itself a comedy. I think the people who made the DVD took a quote from somebody who called it a comedy.
I think that it was what it said about itself. Now, I mean, the people that made the case may not have been the filmmakers, so I understand that. But the people that released the DVD called it a comedy in some fashion.
Yeah, I mean... Part of comedy that's an issue with so many people is it's so subjective. Not just to when you watch it, but to your sense of humor.
Right, what you find funny.
If you find physical humor, like, you're funny. Like, that's your top right. funny. You laugh at things like people falling off a building or people...
You're going to love Jim Carrey.
People getting punched in the face or like really like, yeah, rubber-faced Jim Carrey, Dumb and Dumber style. Like, if that's your type of humor and you kind of have that type of humor all through your life, not just when you're young, but like if that's what you stick with, you know, then you'll never find a movie like Little Miss Sunshine to be hilarious.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, someone who's much more interested in a... in a word humor, like in a, like, doesn't care how many times somebody gets hit in the face. In fact, finds Jim Carrey's faces irritating and absolutely unfunny. You'll never find those movies funny. Like, you'll find something more like True Grit or, you know, something like Sunshine Cleaning, Little Miss Sunshine, something like, what's that one? Dark comedies, what I would call dark comedies.
And I think for me, if I was to assign for myself something, you know, in common that like those four share in common, I would say that they're all absurd.
Yeah.
They're... rather than the performance itself being what is funny, the situation in which they are putting the characters in,
right,
which is absurd, is what makes it funny.
The fact that Alan Arkin is dead in the back seat and they're driving across the country, Greg Kinnear, Steve Carell.
Right.
That's a funny situation. It's a terrible situation.
Yes.
That these characters are forced in and we get to find humor in it.
Right.
Yeah, I think...
And so Kevin Spacey getting shot in the head.
Hilarious.
You go back and watch that movie.
Because...
you're going to be rolling on the floor laughing.
I think if you... okay, so that's where my rub is. If you were to replace and rub, and I say that's where my issue is, I don't have an issue. It's your list of top six comedies. It's not that. But I think if you were to replace one of two things. One, if you were to add, this is my favorite type of comedy.
Okay.
Movies like True Grit, American Beauty, Fight Club. These movies that are dark humor. Those are my favorite types of comedy. I think I would be happy with your list.
Okay.
And be like, that makes more sense. In which case, Napoleon Dynamite and School of Rock do not belong on that
list. They're the outliers. Those are the ones that made it in from my childhood.
Right.
They made it from my adolescence into the
That's
list.
Fair. But there has to be that caveat of... my favorite type of comedy is dark comedy, and these are some of my favorites.
Why can't they just be my favorite comedies?
They can be, but they're not. They're not comedies. So I think for someone who watches lots of different types of movie, a comedy is The Hangover, is Airplane, is Anchorman, something that has no story to it except the moral is to make you laugh.
It's funny. Right.
And so I don't have an issue with your list. I just think that like it's so hard to hear Napoleon Dynamite and American Beauty on the same list, being like those aren't the same movie. Like they don't belong on the list together. Popstar and True Grit don't belong on the same movie or on the same list. Have you watched Popstar yet?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah, that's one of the few mockumentaries that I know that I've seen.
Yeah, right.
It was fine.
Yeah.
It was fine.
Yeah.
Probably be like 3 or 4.
Okay.
On your scale.
Huh.
I mean...
I'd be happy with a 4 if it was a 4 or 5.
I liked the music.
Yeah.
I do like Lonely Island music. I thought there were definitely funny parts. But I don't like comedy. I mean, that's ultimately what it comes down to.
Yes.
I largely think most comedic movies just aren't very good movies.
I agree.
And so, like, it was fine. If we're just, I probably would give it a 4 or a 5 if we're more talking comedy. Yeah, then I probably would give it up, you know, give it a higher, which I usually do, you know, more rated against the genre.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, as a comedy, I'd say it's, you know, 4 or 5. As a movie, like most comedies for me, it's, you know, 3 or 4, whatever. It's just, it's not terrible.
Right, right.
You know, but.
Yeah, well.
Well, we have, this is definitely a long interview. I think you're not only going to get a sequel, I think you might get your own trilogy.
A trilogy? That's
exciting. I mean, which is appropriate for being the movie lover that you are.
It's true.
I will end on, I don't think we'll get to necessarily touch specifically on just music in general, but I do want to just end with your belief that self-expression is important. You choose to do that through movies and music. Those are the outlets you've chosen. But just in general, as a philosophy, why do you think that self-expression is important?
I think it is the difference that between humanity and nature. I think that, like,
okay.
I think self-expression through writing, poetry, filming, painting, like, however you decide to express yourself, I think that is what makes us human versus anything else.
Yeah.
There are lots of different examples of animals who build things. Beavers build homes.
Right.
Ants build huge homes, you know, beehives. Yeah. So there's a lot of creation in the animal world. There's lots of dominance in, like, it's, you know, just because we have a bigger territory than another country or another type of people doesn't, yeah, like, there are animal world examples of territorial kingdoms, you know. There's, yeah, prides of lions who are, there's one or two main lions and people want to be in that group, you know. They, right, fight to be in that group, or they get kicked out because they're too sick, or, you know, like, dolphins travel in pods. There's lots of families. There's lots of animals that are monogamous. You know, like, there's nothing that makes humans different than animals, in my humble experience, more so than self-expression. And I think that that's just a really important thing to keep in mind when you're looking at things like music or movies or paintings. Like, we're the only species in the world that can convey emotion or our past or our future or our desire through images or sounds. Like,
yeah.
I think that that's just important. And I'm not a political person, but in this political era, in this, just in this age of technology, like, you can even just cut that I said the political part, or not. Even just in this age where everything is so fast, everything, you can have anything. You don't need anything anymore because it's so accessible. The only thing that's original now is self-expression. And I think that that's a really important part of us as the Earth. You know, like, as our species here on Earth, who knows how long we'll be here for, but, like, it's interesting to think of, like, 100,000 years from now, the fossils they'll be building, or they'll be, like, digging up, are things like the Michelangelo, or, you know, the catacombs of the Vatican. Like, like, what are people going to say about our generation, or just in general, our species, of, like, wow, 100,000 years ago, even us, just 1,000, like, look at this painting, or look, you know, like, we found this thing called a computer. This is what they called it. They called it a computer. Like,
yeah,
there's things out in the wave, in the radio wavelengths that are solely human, you know. And I think that that's just a really important part of our history that, I don't know, I'm worried about our generation's kids. Like, I'm worried about my kids' generations just losing all of that.
Yeah, I mean, more and more the, I mean, at least in America, our society is focused solely on the dollar.
Yeah.
The business of something versus the fulfillment you get just from doing something.
Yeah.
And that, you know, in other societies of, you know, societies past or, you know, probably still societies in remote parts of the world, where, like, the artists of the tribe are the revered ones, and the people in the tribe provide for them because of the things that they provide, you know, because of the intangible things provided to the community from an artist that not everyone can provide.
Right. I think of, like, my daughter, Gracie. She made this song. And she called it her color song. And she'd, like, colored different lines in notebook paper, different colors. She was like, and then she would sing the color. It would be like, purple, yellow, green, purple, green, yellow. And, like, I was like, wow, that's so cool. Like, why did you do that? And she's like, because I felt like these colors needed a song. It's just like, number one. Adorable.
Right. Oh, for sure.
But number two, like, I don't know. I just think that that's so cool. Now, obviously, I'm the dad, so I'm like, oh, it's amazing. It's so cool. But, like...
Well, but to just interject real quick, it is amazing that just the act of creating a song. Like, it's something she came up with on her own that nobody made her do. She solely did it, like she said, just because she thought these colors needed a song.
Right.
Objectively speaking, from music theory standpoint, I'm sure it wasn't a good song. But like we talked about, sometimes it's not about the outcome of it. It's the act of doing it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I don't know, that's what's important to me about self-expression. Like, one day I hope Gracie writes a song or a poem that gives me an insight to who she is, not because she wants to make a lot of money or make an app, but because she feels like whatever she writes is an important part of her. And, like, I don't know, I think that that's so, like, I'm excited to see, like, not to turn this podcast all religious, but I have a tattoo on my back that says compassion and righteousness. And it's from Exodus, when God describes himself, like the first time God gives us his self-expression. And I never really understood why that was important to me until this moment right now. This is like, who are you, Kenny? Like, or who am I? Like, there's no other way to find out who you are. I could read your autobiography, or I could read a book about you. Right. I could remember all the things that you and I have done together. Right. But until I hear it from you, until you have a song, or even just a conversation, it's like, I won't know who you are until you tell me.
Right.
And, like, I don't know. I just think that that's really interesting.
I mean, that right there is the purpose of me making you introduce yourself.
Yeah.
This is, you know, like I said, we said it off the air, but my opinion of what makes you Kevin is going to be what is significant to me about you. It doesn't necessarily tell me what you think is significant about you.
Right.
And so, I agree. I think that self-expression is often discouraged. But at the same time, I also think that over time, that's why, you know, generally speaking, when you get into like appreciating art, you know, you prefer a person like a Bruce Springsteen that writes all of his own music over a Miley Cyrus who doesn't.
Right.
You know, like, that's not an expression necessarily of her.
It's right. It's
a song that was picked for her because
she has a good voice or
do it well. Right. And it fits her persona. And I think that that's important. I think encouraging people to express themselves, it's an interesting balance, because I think you also then have the, you can go too far with it and you have people that, well, maybe it's just the wrong outlook. Maybe the people that, you know, like you think about somebody who they're very proud of something that they've created, but it's terrible.
Right.
You know, it's objectively bad. Sure. Nobody else appreciates it, but nobody necessarily wants to be the one to tell them it's terrible.
Right.
Maybe it's not the right thing to tell them it's bad. You know, maybe like if that is a true expression of who they are, maybe the people that don't like it need to examine like why they don't like it, not from an objective standpoint, but from a standpoint of like, this is somebody's self-expression.
It's interesting. Why
is it more valid? Why is it less valid than someone else's?
Right. And personal taste is unignorable. Like,
right.
Especially when it comes to art.
Yes.
You and sure. I don't like the same type of music.
No.
You picked Miley Cyrus as an example, and I happen to love Miley Cyrus. Not as much, not anywhere near as much as Bruce Springsteen. But
I mean, I wonder if even subconsciously, not necessarily even just the product that they create, maybe it is that maybe you have more appreciation for Bruce Springsteen because he's been doing it longer.
No, you were like, right the first time. That's 100% accurate about Bruce Springsteen's music. Right. I love his lyrics because they come from him.
Yeah.
His music comes from him and his band. Like, I do think that that's a huge reason why I am drawn to him versus other people.
And Miley Cyrus makes an extremely catchy pop song.
That's true.
I mean, like she I said, did. I dance to Party in the USA almost nightly.
She did come in like a wrecking ball.
Yes, she did. Not wearing any clothes at all.
Yeah.
I feel like that was a spoof of that song.
The one with Ron Jeremy?
There's a spoof of that song from Ron Jeremy?
When you go home, Google Ron Jeremy wrecking ball.
I know for a fact that I've heard somewhere, I came in like a wrecking ball, not wearing any clothes at all. That's not the real lyric.
But, no, yeah. It's not.
but it is, yeah. That is, because she's not wearing clothes.
Yeah, very, very limited clothing in that one, yeah. She's expressing herself.
Who am I to say?
Different way.
Who am I to discount it, Kevin?
Thanks for having me.
Kevin, it was a great conversation.
It was fun.
I look forward to doing this with my friends, because I do feel like it's, if you don't set aside time to have conversations like this, then it's hard to do so.
And did perhaps, you learn anything new? That's a takeaway.
Gosh. I mean, I didn't. I feel like that I knew a lot of what we talked about. But I feel like I got better insight.
Mm.
I feel like, you know, I was able to get insight as to, like, what you liked about school, not just that you did.
Right.
And how, honestly, how that time in school shaped you to, you know, it's still affecting you years later. you know, on a weekly basis. I mean, you probably still, you probably do a podcast now because of being involved in the arts.
Sure.
In school.
Yeah.
And, that's, you know, like, so I feel like that I got, there was no like bombshell.
Yeah.
That I just never knew.
Right.
Or, but I feel like I got good insight and I feel like I know you better now, Kevin.
Well, it was fun.
And it's recorded, so if I ever
forget,
I can go back and listen again.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Well, thanks.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. Really enjoyed having the chance to hang out with a good friend and, you know, just learn more about him. It really is incredible the things that you can learn about people that you've known for a long time. I've known Kevin for 10 plus years at this point, and this conversation was really an opportunity to even just get to know him better. One thing I've realized over the course of growing older and getting married and being friends with couples and having kids and spending time with families is that really it's very rare that I get the opportunity to spend one-on-one time with someone and just have meaningful conversations. So this podcast, really, that's the purpose of me doing this, is to have the opportunity to spend one-on-one time with people and just really get to know them better. So it was a really awesome chance to do that with Kevin. I do have a special project on the horizon, a little 10-part series that I'm going to be doing with a really good friend, Matt DeLuca. So look forward to that. Those will be a lot shorter episodes than these ones have been. We'll be going through the entire Saw franchise. So if you like horror films or if you just like me, look forward to that. Give it a listen. Until next time, I know I probably blew it, but this is Chew It with Pruitt.